say tagline first? No.
What's up?
Okay,
this is
yeah.
Movies on Up. That's how it goes.
Maybe someday I'll learn. I'll remember. Muscle memory should have
See if you can remember for the next episode you do.
In a town full of fiction. God damn it, no.
Oh, God.
I still goofed. That is a good kickoff, though. What's up? It's Movies on Up. In a town full of fiction, everyone has a version of the truth. I'm Dave, joined by my truthful co-host, Mr. Ryan.
I am the truth.
I am the fiction. I'm Dave, he's Ryan. We are Movies on Up. Our tagline, I don't know what that means. Our tagline for this week, in a town full of fiction, everyone has a version of the truth. If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or Twitter, @moviesonup. If you're right and we pick you, you will win a glorious Movies on Up prize package.
And that ain't no lie.
Superman will jump out the window himself and deliver it to you. This week, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood from Quentin Tarantino comes to theaters. And so we got to thinking, hey, let's do our favorite Hollywood movies. Which, on the surface, I thought, hey, that's really easy. I could probably rattle off a handful on my own. I have a question for you because I came across...
You have a question. What did you determine was a Hollywood movie?
No.
I'm going to come up with some
no.
answer that just fits. Okay.
Was this easy for you?
Yes.
I assumed so because as I'm going through, it's like, oh, yeah, that's a Hollywood movie. Oh, crap. Ryan likes that movie. Oh, that's a Hollywood. Crap. Ryan will probably have. Because there's a lot of noir movies.
Yes, there are.
In and around Hollywood.
Yes.
So that's what I was coming to, is like a lot of the movies
I
liked. I
have a lot of them on my list.
It's like, oh, I'll leave those off because Ryan will say something more inspiring about them than me just being like, oh, that movie's good. So I'm trying to reach, and I'm just trying to think like, okay, how Hollywood are these movies?
Right.
And then I branched out, and I found myself going down like an L.A. movie path.
Which I think is okay.
See, I didn't know.
Hollywood is a part of Los Angeles. So many times movies, if they're quote-unquote Hollywood, they take place in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
So they're going to be other places.
But there were movies that are like, oh, this is an L.A. movie. Like, Hollywood's maybe there.
To Live and Die in L.A., an L.A. movie.
Yeah.
I would not argue that that is
okay.
a Hollywood movie.
Okay, then you won't argue as much as I thought, maybe.
No.
So, okay. I had a handful. I knew what my number one was going to be, because it's one of those that I try to mention anytime I can, and we don't get to mention it a whole lot.
So it's Heat.
I wish. It almost, you know what, that was.
It's an L.A. movie.
Yeah, but I left it off because that's a Michael Mann movie. Like, that's, yeah, I don't associate L.A. with it. I don't know. It just doesn't scream L.A. to me as being essential to it. But the rest I have are. So let's kick it off. Your number five favorite Hollywood movie.
I think organically I've started to do something with my number fives. And it's, if there's a recent movie that fits on the list, I like to put it on there because it's quote-unquote topical. It helps if I like the movie, and it's a good way to talk about it when it might be relevant because it's not probably going to make an end-of-the-year list or anything like that. And for this one, David Robert Mitchell's Under the Silver Lake certainly qualifies. Is that on your list somewhere?
No.
No?
I'll mention it. I'll talk about it.
Okay. Yeah. Dave, you couldn't see it because this is an audio-only podcast, but had we had a video component, you would see him shake his head vehemently. This is, of course, the Andrew Garfield movie that was delayed for...
7 years.
Yeah, just about.
He filmed it before Spider-Man 1. He filmed it when Tobey Maguire was Spider-Man.
Exactly, right. Andrew Garfield, Riley Keough, Topher Grace, so we had a little bit of a Spider-Man, Spider-Verse collaboration there. Silver Lake fits this perfectly. You had mentioned a lot of noirs, and Under the Silver Lake is a neo-noir, very much an updated version of a detective story, a gumshoe story. And typically in these stories, someone like a Humphrey Bogart, in this case, it's Andrew Garfield, is presented with a crime that he may not even be getting paid to solve. He just feels like it's his duty, either because he falls in love with the dame, which happens to Andy Garfield, or the curiosity just gets the best of him. And I think it's a little bit of both of those things for Garfield's character. And Mitchell takes him, Garfield, all over L.A. Couple locations specifically, the Hollywood Forever Cemetery and Griffith Park Observatory. Griffith Park, there was a famous knife duel there with Rebel Without a Cause, which could make the list, but to me, that's not as much Hollywood. A lot of old Hollywood love as Garfield Sam, very much an old aficionado, movies in 40s, 50s, very much when Hollywood was glamorized. It was in the center of a lot of movies, self-referential, that were coming out at that time. I will admit that Under the Silver Lake, very stylistic, humorous, more than you think it's going to be, and absurd, for sure. It's a movie that's going to age better than it's looked at now. I think it's going to be one of those cult movies that will eventually find its following. The soundtrack I thought was great. This is a fun ride for people that are into this genre. If you are not, maybe you want to stay away.
I almost texted you about this movie
because you hated it.
I did not like it. I did not finish it, though. I will admit
that. You're not going to like it anymore when you finish
it. I rarely give up on movies, but this one I was not getting. I was not into it, and I had meant to ask if you watched it. I figured you would. I did text you to let you know it was on Prime.
You did.
You hadn't noticed, but then I meant to text you later to see.
He texted me, not you, the listener.
Yeah. Well, depends on who you are. No, I haven't texted anybody else but you. My number five, it is a Hollywood movie. It's another film noir, a mystery, a frame job movie. A lot of times my number five will be one like, oh, this is an obvious one, and I probably like it more than all my other movies, but I'll put it at five just to get it out of the way.
In case it happens to be crossover.
Yeah, it's from 1988. It's Robert Zemeckis's Who Framed Roger Rabbit. We've done an episode on this. We've talked about it any chance I get. Baby Louie and Jessica Rabbit and Roger Rabbit. You have this whole Hollywood thing with Toontown, and the whole plot revolves around Hollywood and Toontown. So it was hard not to put it in, and I just love this movie. It's very much a showbiz movie. It's a Hollywood movie. It fits that noir, like, oh, a bunch of noir movies take place in Hollywood. Bob Hoskins being great, Charles Fleischer, Christopher Lloyd is a great villain in it, and I love this movie. Like, I don't want to go too much on it because we've done a whole episode. If you want to hear me rave about it, look for our Roger Rabbit episode. But it was one of the first ones that came to mind that made me think like, oh, this will be an easy list. I love these movies.
And Hoskins is that character. I mean, that's your gumshoe. I mean, it feels like a period piece. I'm actually not sure when the movie is supposed to be set. But if you told me it was supposed to be set in 1948, I could kind of buy it. And I think that's by design. I love the design of that movie. It's a lot of fun.
It's a period piece, but you're not really sure
what the period is.
Yeah.
It's great. That's a lot of fun. I was assuming that was going to be on your list. My number four, I decided I wanted this slot to go to a crime movie. And the first blush, I was like, oh, Black Dahlia. Another very much Hollywood. It's the gruesome murder of an actress. And it has some really famous people in it. And then I thought, you know what? That movie kind of sucked, despite Scarlett Johansson being very good in it. So I thought I would go with another crime movie, the aforementioned Hollywoodland from 2006, directed by Alan Coltier, starring Adrian Brody, Diane Lane, Ben Affleck, and the aforementioned Bob Hoskins shows up in this as well. Affleck, despite at least on my list only being third billed, is really good in this movie, playing George Reeves, the guy that was Superman in the serial show, Superman and the Mole Men. He really kind of brings a sadness to this character that was a hero to so many kids. He was an actor, quote unquote, actor, that had a part in Gone with the Wind, and his career was kind of on the skids, and he gets this job in his underwear playing Superman. And he's kind of tired of it. There's a scene where he's in a great war movie, From Here to Eternity, and people are laughing when they see him on the screen because, oh, that's Superman. That's the kids guy. So for a guy that really, truly wanted to act and be recognized for the talent that he was, and in reality, he just felt like a clown, like a circus performer. You could see that in Affleck's performance, and I think it really lends credence to the theory that Brody's character kind of favors, that the way Reeves ended up dead was by suicide. We get to see, I think it's like three or four different theories throughout the course of the movie. And that's the one that's sort of in the most detail. They still don't really know, and the movie doesn't definitively tell you how can it, but I think that's kind of what they're putting forth as the leader in the clubhouse, so to speak. The studio system, MGM specifically, plays a big part in the movie as Reeves was having an affair with the studio head's wife. Plenty of mentions of the filmography of Reeves, like I mentioned, Gone with the Wind, From Here to Eternity. I mean, it's very much a Hollywood story. It is about a real Hollywood guy doing real Hollywood stuff.
And Hollywood's in the title.
It is. Hollywoodland is in the title.
Yeah, this was one of my also-rans. It's one of those that it was borderline making it, and I figured, like, oh, Ryan will probably have it, and if he doesn't, I'm fine just mentioning it as a...
As an also-ran.
Yeah, as an also-ran. You mentioned Black Dahlia being this great cast and, yes, like, not good.
Yes.
I always associate that movie. Like, sometimes movies just get paired up in my head. Mm-hmm. That and Zodiac,
right,
are the same movie to me.
Zodiac's better, though.
It's still not good. My number four. This is one of those that I thought maybe it's a stretch. It's maybe more of an L.A. movie, but I feel like the Hollywood mindset is the driving force behind it. From 2014, a movie we've mentioned a lot, we've raved about any chance we get, written and directed by Dan Gilroy, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. It is Nightcrawler. Not Hollywood in the sense that Gyllenhaal wants to be an actor. He wants the spotlight, though, like, for his work. He wants his work to be seen worldwide, and that's him being the evil, you know, blood cells.
Creep.
Yeah, it's a news movie with the Hollywood feel because, you take the same...
Some of his news was staged.
Yeah, you take the same plot of an understudy wanting to be the lead in the play, and it's what they would do. It's the same kind of thing. Like, this is what he wants to do, and he'll stop at nothing to get there. He does want that fame and that notoriety, just not his name in lights. He wants his work being everywhere. And it's very much a Hollywood mentality. I thought it was borderline because it is more of an LA movie, but there is some Hollywood stuff in there. But it's just, I felt like the whole mindset of the movie, even Rene Russo's character, very much like the studio head of the news team. So the parallels between this and a movie about an actress that'll do anything, show like that Nicole Kidman one, yeah, To Die For. Like, I just feel the parallels there, and since it is an L.A. movie, I had to sneak it on there because I really like it, and I know you do too, and
yeah,
I liked it more than my other also-rans.
It's tough. L.A. and Hollywood typically are so synonymous in the TV industry and the film industry being separate, but again, they do kind of bleed into each other. I like this movie. I would have liked it more on that movie list we did a month or so ago about TV stars when the late night movie came out. I'm not going to argue that it doesn't belong on here because my number three is the biggest stretch I have. It is directed by Joel Cohen. It is from 1991, Barton Fink, starring John Turturro, John Goodman, and Judy Davis. Fink is hired by Capitol Pictures to move to LA from New York and stop writing plays for Broadway and start writing scripts, plural, for the studio, the first of which is a wrestling picture, which Barton knows nothing about. And that is really where the involvement of Hollywood ends. It is easy to see, especially after, and this is 16 years before the event of which I'm about to mention, the 2007 Hollywood writer's strike, how much Barton Fink deals with the treatment of writers and creative types in the studio system. So in that respect, very much before its time, they were treated, I don't want to say like commodities necessarily, they were just bought and sold basically to sit in this room and just crank out scripts so that the creative people, the important people, could go ahead and make those. It is Cohen filmmaking at its best, plenty of room for interpretation from the viewer. We can even argue about whether or not the last half of the movie is real or it's just a dream, or maybe it's a script Barton's working on. Or maybe it's just the fact that his life has become more unbelievable than the fiction he is being paid to write. John Goodman is great in this movie. I think people, if we're talking John Goodman in a Coen movie, Walter is probably the first thing that comes to mind for good reason. But amazing casting as the gregarious Charlie Meadows here. He's really the one that I think drags us to the climax. His acting, the screen, the scene, everything takes on his characteristics of his character the further we get into the movie. It's fantastic. It's a part that they wrote specifically for Totoro, but you'd swear that they also wrote Charlie specifically for Goodman.
I mentioned some movies just kind of getting lumped together. They're a few years apart, but one thing I always lump with Hollywoodland, and I always get it mixed up, is my number three. Came out a few years earlier, from 2003, directed by James Cox, starring Val Kilmer as John Holmes, the porn star, with Kate Bosworth, Carrie Fisher, Dylan McDermott, Michael Pitt. It is Wonderland. There's a big murder that happens, and there's one man that's at the center of all of it. He happens to be a porn star. It does a good job going into that lifestyle of
porn
and John Holmes. It's after his career. He's not the star that he was, and he's still just kind of hanging on. But then there's this murder that happens around him that's a real murder, and it happened on Wonderland Avenue in Hollywood. So, yeah, it's a Hollywood movie. I really like it. Ted Levine's in it from Silence of the Lambs. I just really like this movie. I don't know why. It's Val Kilmer is one of those that I just, if we ever do a favorite Val Kilmer episode, it's going to be hard, because the Val Kilmer movies I love, I really, really love. And I hate that he's...
It might be hard for you to cut off at five.
This would be an also-ran. This is good. It's one of his probably better performances. It's 2003. It's not really peak Val Kilmer time. It's not really when you're expecting headlining Val Kilmer, but he does a really good job in this movie. It's a fascinating story. Like, that whole story is just fascinating, and I thought the movie did a pretty good job of adapting it.
My number two, I really like an awful lot. It is from 1997, directed by Curtis Hanson's L.A. Confidential, starring Kevin Spacey, Russell Crowe, Guy Pearce, and Kim Basinger. To start, L.A. Confidential is based on excellent source material from James Ellroy, and I am not the one on this podcast that throws around the term perfect movie, but if there is one, LA Confidential is it. Every aspect of this movie is right on point, and had it not been for Titanic, it probably would have won an additional 4 to 5 Oscars that year, above just Kim Basinger's Best Supporting Actress and the Adapted Screenplay award that it won. Purposefully, my list is noir heavy. This is often, I think, classified as a neo-noir. That's the term I use for Under the Silver Lake. But it is not the term that I would use for LA Confidential. I don't really think there's anything neo about it. It is a film noir that's just made 55 years later. Yeah, it's not black and white. That's the noir part about film noir. But I think when people use neo, to me, like Brick is a great example of a neo-noir. It's a story that would fit in a movie out of the 1940s, but it's just put in a modern setting and with a modern spin on it. In the case of Brick, it was in high school. There is nothing about LA Confidential that is updated other than when the movie takes place. Everything else about it feels like it's something you're pulling right out of the 1940s. If you somehow missed it, it's absolutely worth going back and watching it. It's peak Guy Pearce, Russell Crowe, just as he was about to blow up. I understand that Kevin Spacey is not a guy that most people want to watch nowadays, and I get that. But having already seen this movie, he's fantastic in it. You can't go back and unring that bell. Curtis Hanson also directed 8 Mile, which I've been known to put on a list or two. And you really can't mention historically fictionalized L.A. and not think about Ellroy's L.A. Quartet. I have not read, but knowing enough about it, that guy gets L.A. And L.A. and Hollywood are so synonymous. This guy did a great job of writing for that setting.
This is one that I knew was going to be on your list.
It's a safe assumption.
Yeah, I thought it was actually going to be even higher.
It was very nearly my number one.
My number two, I don't feel like I have to justify. It's very much a Hollywood movie. The only thing I have to justify is that it being my number two, because I don't love it as much as I should, a number two, but I love a lot of stuff about it. It is from 1995, directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, based on an Elmore Leonard novel. It's Get Shorty. It's a fun movie. Like, it's John Travolta's in the mob, and he wants to get into the movie business. It's recently been adapted into a show on whatever Epix is, I think. It's got me. With Romano, and it's got Chris O'Dowd. The TV show adaptation is good. Like, it's really, really good. The movie, it was okay, but an Elmore Leonard novel making that much money on the screen in 1995 opened the door for my favorite Quentin Tarantino movie, Jackie Brown, and for one of the few movies that I consider a perfect movie, Out of Sight. Those came out in 97 and 98. So it was hard for me to have an Elmore Leonard movie that fits this list perfectly and not put it on my list. It's more of a loved by association. Like, it gets put up higher. Because I try to sneak Jackie Brown in, because that's an L.A. movie, though. Like, I don't think you don't associate Hollywood with it. Whereas Nightcrawler, I could justify a little more. Like, I wanted to put Jackie Brown, but I couldn't. Especially because Get Shorty fits so perfectly. It's a mobster who is trying to break into the movie business. It's a perfect blend of Hollywood and crime. And it's a movie that should be right up my alley that I don't think he did as well as he should have. But the book is amazing. So, yeah. That's my number two.
Look at us getting all literate at the top of our list. To the best of my knowledge.
I'll wait till my number one.
My number one was not adapted from a book. I love this movie. I don't like it as much as L.A. Confidential, but it has much more of a Hollywood feel. In fact, it is named, well, it shares its name with a stretch of road in Hollywood called Sunset Boulevard. It was from 1950, directed by Billy Wilder, starring William Holden, Gloria Swanson, and Eric von Stroheim. As good as Affleck was portraying the real George Reeves, Gloria Swanson was even better as the washed-up former silent film actress Norma Desmond. She is batshit crazy, and we realize that very early on in the movie. But to see how her delusions are enabled is really something to watch. And while Barton Fink deals with the plight of the writers in the studio system, Sunset Boulevard takes it from not necessarily the POV, but the POV of someone very close watching what happens to an individual after their career's end. Someone, in the case of this fictionalized actress in Norma Desmond, Buster Keaton shows up in the movie. He's one of the most famous real silent movies film stars of that era, and ostensibly Norma Desmond was on his level, and now she has nothing. She lives in this giant mansion basically by herself, with only her caretaker around to write fan mail to her as if she has fans still. Cecil B. DeMille and the aforementioned Buster Keaton have cameos, so there's very much a feeling that the folks that were making this movie probably knew a Norma, and maybe she didn't go quite as far as Swanson's Norma did, but it is a fantastic character piece about this actress that just can't let go to the very end when she's headed down the staircase. I'm ready for my close-up, Mr. DeMille. That's where this comes from, and it is not exactly uttered in the way that you'd normally think that it would be. I love this movie. It's one that I think a lot of people miss because it is so old. People call it a film noir, but there's not much of a mystery. The ending of the movie happens right at the beginning, so there's really no mystery as to what happens. It's more or less why it happened, and the why is a fun character piece there for sure. I believe Swanson and Stroheim both nominated for Academy Awards. I don't think either of them won that year. However,
speaking of not winning any Oscars, we move on to my number one. I have said many, many times, I loved Steve Martin, the movie star. I love Steve Martin, the stand-up. But when I was growing up, I was huge into Steve Martin, the movie star. And late 80s, early 90s, Eddie Murphy is probably one of my favorite movie stars ever. So you put them together in 1999, and you get Frank Oz's Bowfinger, written by Steve Martin. Steve Martin plays a dude who runs a Hollywood-based production company who has never made a movie and really doesn't have anybody interested in giving them money to make a movie, but luckily he has $2,184 saved. And according to him, every movie is made for $2,184. It's such a stupid, silly movie. It gave us Eddie Murphy in dual roles as Kit Ramsey, the big movie star, and Jif Ramsey, the not movie star. Heather Graham is the small town actress wanting to make it big, gets her role in this movie that's filming itself around Kit Ramsey, trying to have him star in the movie without him knowing it, with his brother filling in the other shots. It's just so stupid and it's so silly, but it's perfect Steve Martin for what he does on screen. It was written by him, so it's written specifically for him, and it plays so hard to his strengths. And it's Eddie Murphy just letting loose. Both characters are just silly, and you feel like Kit is an extreme caricature of Eddie Murphy. It's just such a silly, silly fun movie that I love, and I will laugh anytime I think of it. And I try to sneak it on any list I can, and the Hollywood List was the perfect one to sneak it in on. Did you have any also-rans?
Oh, God. Inherent Vice was going to be my number five until I went with the more recent Under the Silver Lake. They're pretty similar, oddly enough.
Did not like either of them.
Yeah, which I get it, because they're similar. I went L.A. Confidential instead of Mulholland Drive because I think it's easier to follow, and I think it's a better movie, though they're both very good. Boogie Nights certainly could have fit on the list. It's about the porn industry, the 70s and 80s, so a lot like Wonderland. As soon as you said that, I was like, well, I guess I'm glad I didn't put my porn movie on there. I mentioned Black Dahlia being subbed out for Hollywoodland. Less Than Zero, I think, is a good Hollywood movie.
Yeah, that one didn't hit my radar.
Yeah, neither of us had that. Chinatown, obviously, I love me a noir. That is a noir, although I do associate that much more with L.A. than Hollywood. But this is a list I probably could have done 20 movies
for. See, I left L.A. Confidential off because I knew it would be high on your list. I thought it would be one or two. I left Hollywoodland off for the same reason. One that I thought would be one or two that I'm shocked didn't even get mentioned, and The Nice Guys. I think that's very much a Hollywood movie. And we both love it. I left that off because I assumed it would be on yours. Chaplin, I liked. And Ed Wood. But then it's like, I don't want to just go into biopics of like Hollywood people.
Yeah, that's what was hard. Movies about making movies. Yeah. Shadow the Vampire.
Like those two I liked because of the mostly because of the performances. Adaptation, kind of, because the brother wants to write the screenplay. Right. And Hollywood Homicide. Harrison Ford, Josh Hartnett. You know, I'm a big Hartnett fan. So.
How about Josh Hartnett almost having a couple movies on the list?
Yeah, what was he was in?
Black Dahlia.
Yeah, that's right. It was one of the clickbaity articles that I saw online the other day. It was why you don't see Josh Hartnett in Hollywood movies anymore. Because he sucks. Like, that's why. You shouldn't have seen him when he was in them. Next week, we are back with our favorite Jason Statham movies. Somebody you do see in Hollywood movies.
A lot.
Hobbs and Shaw comes out. It's the first Fast and Furious movie I will see. I'm pretty excited about that. More excited about this list than I thought. Like, I knew my one and two were going to be
Statham
great.
The Statham list.
Yeah, the Statham list. Like, I knew my one and two were going to be movies that I love, but, like, I really like the rest of my list as well.
I think this one's very top heavy, and I'm gonna set the cutoff point at three. The top three movies I think are excellent. After that,
the top two movies are excellent for me, and the other three I like. So we'll be back next week with our favorite Jason Statham movies.
Pretty crossover heavy, I would assume.
I would assume, yeah. And until then,
keep it up.